نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is declaring a challenge to the believers, to those who claim to have iman, to those who claim to be a mu'min. In Surah Al-Ankabut, a chapter that if a mu'min who never reads the Quran or listens to the Quran, at least once a year, Allah wanted to make sure that the message of Surah Ankabut reaches the believers. Surah Ankabut is one of those chapters that is recommended to read in Laylatul Qadr. And a mu'min, you see, that when it comes to the ibadat of Laylatul Qadr, you see, most people make it to Laylatul Qadr. And the way that believers treat other ibadat and worship, like prayers and fasting and these things, you see, they don't avoid Laylatul Qadr. They come there. And when we look down and see why is this the case, we see that Allah, in every ibadah, whether it is prayers or worship or fasting or hajj or anything of these sorts, that we look at the worship that Allah has made obligatory on us, you see that with everything, Allah, He promised akhirat, the reward for prayer is Jannat. The reward for Hajj and all the obligations you see, it is the hereafter. But Allah, when it came to Laylatul Qadr, added an incentive. He added an incentive other than Akhirat. And because of this incentive, you see, a lot of people, they come for Laylatul Qadr. You know, it's like, for example, if you just ask the students to write notes, you know, they might or they might not. But if you add an incentive and say there's a reward after that, you see, they will. And the issue is that if the reward has to do with dunya, right, maybe they'll be a little bit more attracted toward this. Allah in Laylatul Qadr did something like that. You see, when it comes to prayers and fasting and this and that, you see, the wisdoms might have effect in this dunya also, right? But there's no explicit incentive added into it. But when it came to Laylatul Qadr, there was an explicit incentive that Allah added, and that was dunya. Allah said that on Laylatul Qadr, your rizq is going to be ascertained that you will get for the year. So now that people know that they are going to gain dunya by going to Laylatul Qadr, you see more people come. And Allah attracted more people to come to Laylatul Qadr by this incentive so that they can listen to the message that is going to be given. And that one of those messages that is given is Surah Ankabut. And obviously Allah wanted, He added that incentive so that people would come, and when they would come, they would listen to the message that is being given. So that if they don't listen to it in the whole year, at least they'll listen to it on Laylatul Qadr. So when we read Surah Ankabut, the first ayat of Surah Ankabut is the subject of our discussion. And Allah says in this ayat, Alif Lam Mim, أَحَسِبَ النَّاسُ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ. Allah says, as a question, He raises this question, a rhetorical question, and the answer is already in the question. He says, does man think, and it is like challenging their thinking and letting them know that there is a misconception here, there is a misunderstanding here amongst people. They think that they can say, I believe, and they will be left alone. Does man think that they can say, I believe and I am a Muslim, and that they will be left alone? No trials? That Allah is going to tell the angels that, listen, He says He's a Mu'min, so let Him go, let Him be. Not that way. In other words, when you translate it into English, and if you want to say this in English, when you say the word hasiba, when you want to translate it, it will come out like this. And it will mean that does man think that they can say, I believe, and get away with it? Do you think that you can say, I am a Muslim, and get away with it? You think that's going to be that easy? That you're going to get away with it? No. You will be tried. You will be tested. And you will go through fitna. You will go through fitna if you are a believer. If you say you're a believer. If you are not a believer, if you are a kafir, then Allah lets you be. You can have a good life. If you're a mushrik, have a good life. If you're a munafiq, have a good life. But if you say, I'm a mu'min, Allah is saying no. Now we're going to try you. Now we're going to test you. We're going to make your life miserable. And so, my friends, we claim to be a mu'min. When we say that I believe in Allah and the Messenger, I believe in Ahlul Bayt, so this is a claim we are making. And Allah is saying that's all that it is. It's just a claim. And that claim will be certified when you're tested, when you have to go through fitna. When you're going to go through fitna. And now to explain this a little bit more, now let us see this chapter, and you see how Allah is speaking to the believers. Two places Allah has used Alif Lam. And everyone knows where the first place is. Alif Lam Mim, Dhalika al-kitabu la rayba fi. The first ayat after Alhamd, Surah Baqarah. There Allah is saying, Alif Lam Mim, And after that he's saying there is no doubt in the Quran. Those who have doubt, let me tell you, there is no doubt in the Quran. There cannot be a doubt in the Quran. In other words, there is complete certainty in the Quran. So one time Allah uses Alif Lam Mim to speak of the certainty of the Quran and to say that there is no doubt in the Quran. And the second place is Alif Lam Mim is to say that there is doubt in the words of believers. Allah is saying there's a doubt in what you're saying. You say you're a mu'min, but there's a doubt. And we need to clear that doubt. And how do we clear that doubt? He says by fitna. We're going to put you through fitna. And then we're going to see if you are truly a believer or not. Because Allah says, وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ كَاذِبِينَ. That we want to do this so that we can see who is truthful in their claim and who is lying in their claim. My friends, understand from here. Everyone who claims to be a mu'min, Allah is saying, is going to be tested. And the reason this test is happening is to make sure whether their claim is true or false. So in this ayat, Allah is saying that there are two types of believers, two types of mu'mineen, those who are real and those who are fake, those who are true and those who are phony. My friends, understand this. Two believers, Allah is saying, all those who say we are Shia, there are two types of Shia, those who are real and those who are fake. So we are not the ones who are saying there's a pure Islam. Allah is saying there's a pure Islam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Understand this. Allah is saying that there are real believers and fake believers. True believers and false believers. Those who are truthful, those who are lying. So now we just need to figure out who's who. We just need to know who's who. And the fact is, Allah is saying that I have tested those before you. And Allah makes that claim and says that لَن تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَبْدِيلًا. You will not find a change in Allah's way. Meaning, just like you say you are a believer, people who lived 5,000 years before said they were believers. Just like we tried them, we are going to try you. Allah doesn't change His ways. People change their ways. People change their sunnah. Allah does not change His sunnah. And you see that if you are young, you have one habit. If you grow old, you have another habit. You change your habit. When you are young, you would die for candy. If you're old, you'll die from candy. The same child who used to beg for candy, now when he's old and you want to give him a candy, he'll get upset at you. But you used to beg for candy when you were 4. Well, I'm 84 now. You see, we change. Our sunnah, our habits change. Something we used to love before, we change our ways and now we see we are different. And we change according to our age. We change according to the place we live. You know, I mean, like for those people who migrated from the east, you know, India and Pakistan, you see, you know, they used to live there all their lives and now they come over here. And you will see the changes. Right? When they lived there, they lived in any condition, they're happy there. They came over here, and now they go back, they're like, oh, this dust over here, we can't handle it. What are you talking about? You lived here all your life. You know, now you go to America, you become Americanized, now you come over here, now you see you changed. Just changing your geography has changed your outlook and the way you think, the way you feel. Understand, this happens, my friends. Whether you are poor or rich. You see, Those who are poor always criticize those who are rich. Look at these people. They don't give anything. They have so much money they can give to every center, and every center will be great. If they give their post money, all the Shias will be well off. If I had money. If I had money. Yes. What will you do? If you had money. If I had money, you will see, I will give. But you know what? When Allah gives to him and he becomes rich, then what happens? You see, my friends, it's easy to say that. But when the time comes, then you see what it means. This attitude you had when you were poor, that you want to give to the poor and help the poor, is it going to last until you become rich? You see, when you were poor, and you used to have $100 in your pocket, right? You used to give 50. No, that's 50% of what you have. $50. It wasn't much. It was 50. Now you see, a person has 1 million. Now if you ask him for money, right? He has a hard time giving 100. Now when he gives 100, he says 100. But you have 1 million. You're just giving 100? You see, if he gives 1,000, 1,000 to him seems like a large amount now. But you see, you were much better off when you were poor. You were giving 50% of your wealth. You see, Allah doesn't care how much you give. It's what ratio you're giving. See, when he says 1/5 to a man who has 1,000 in his account, that's 200. Right? And to a man who has 10 million, that's $2 million. So $2 million seems a lot, but it's the same as a person who's giving $2,000 when he has $10,000. Allah is looking at the ratio, how much you can give. But what happens is that when we become rich, you see what happens there. You see, understand this. This is the reason why when we want to be something, then we have to make sure that we are on the same ideology we are on when we reach that place. When we want to be something and we want to be somewhere and we have this goal, when you reach that goal, if your sunnah changes and if your lifestyle changes, then it won't be any use for you to reach that goal. But understand what I'm saying. So if you are poor and you become rich, if you stay on your ideology, then your being wealthy will be useful for you. But if you don't stay on the ideology, and if you change, then being wealthy will be useless. Because now you're not the same way. Just like that, the Imams wanted us to understand. When we remember the Shuhada and said, Ya laytana kunna ma'akum, or how we wish we were with you. So now when we are on the path of being there, then we have to maintain that ideology, that sunnah. If we change our sunnah, even if we were in Karbala, we would be running away. In order to stay with Imam Hussein, the ideology you have and the sunnah you have, you must maintain that until you reach your goal. But when it comes to Allah, He's saying, I do not change my sunnah. Whether it was 5,000 years ago, whether it was in the time of Adam, or whether it was the time of the Muhammad, I will not change my sunnah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. My friends, this is how we know that there are two groups of Shias, two groups of believers. Now for a mu'min, when he wants to reach his goal, and Allah has given those goals, what are the goals of a mu'min? You know? And I'll explain those goals. The first goal of the mu'min is to reach the imam. Is to reach the imam. Be with the imam. This is the goal of a mu'min. If he's not with the imam, you see, the imam is with you. Ghaib doesn't mean that the Imam is absent and he's not here. Ghaib doesn't mean that the Imam is gone and we cannot. Imam is here. Imam is with us. But the issue is that we are not with the Imam. We are not with the Imam. And hence when we reach the Imam will be there for us. When we reach that goal, Imam will be there for us. Those people who have gone to Karbala. You know, the wish of every mu'min is to reach Karbala. We make this wish known, this dua that we make all the time, that we wish we can reach Karbala. I haven't been there. And I ask Allah that, Allah, one day He makes me reach there. My friends, I can just imagine what it will be like to go to that place where this sacrifice and this goal that man has was achieved. To witness that place. You know, and we are here making du'as and working for the Imam all our life with this heartfelt desire that, you know what? One day we will reach there. And I can only imagine that when I get there, all I will be able to tell Imam Hussein and his companions is that peace be upon you. You know, congratulations to you that you have reached your Karbala. You have reached your Karbala. You have reached it. That was your battle. You fought it and you won. And then I would realize that this is not my Karbala. This is Hussein's Karbala and the Karbala of Imam Hussein's companions. This was their battle. They fought the battle. They stood up and they won. Then we realize that, you know what? My Karbala is somewhere else. My battle is somewhere else. Our jihad is somewhere else. That we need to establish that Karbala wherever we are from. Wherever I come from, we need to establish that. That is our goal, to reach Karbala. Not that Karbala which is in Iraq, but the goal of Karbala, of establishing it everywhere in the world. No matter where you are. Making that stand and looking for that opportunity where we can establish Allah's laws. And making our sacrifice for the cause of Allah. This will be our goal. And when we reach that goal, you will see that yes. Right? That is an achievement. That is a great achievement we have made. Yes, if you go to Karbala now, it is not the same Karbala that was at the time of Yazid. It wasn't the same Karbala. We don't have 50,000 soldiers there who are ready to kill us. In fact, you have hotels and agents and guide tours. This is different. Right? That Karbala that we want to reach is where 50,000 soldiers are ready to kill us. For what? For the cause of Allah. That is the Karbala we want to reach. That is the goal we want to reach, my friends. And when we reach that goal, then you will see that the Imam will be wanting to have us with him. You see, from here, understand, when that is our goal, that is the first goal we have. Second goal we have is Jannat, is reaching heaven. Allah, He set these goals for us. And when He gave these goals, now the problem is this. A mu'min is someone who's deserving of it. But what happens, when he wants to go near his Karbala, and when he wants to go towards Jannah, there are chains that are tied on his feet and his arms that he has tied. There are chains that he has tied that prevent him from reaching his goals. And these are the fitna and the trials that he is not able to pass. The trials that he faces and is not able to pass. When you do not pass your trials, when you don't pass your test, then what do you think? You will, that you are going to be given the opportunity to go higher? You see, those who went to Imam Hussein, they passed their tests. They passed their trials and then they reached there. And here we are. If we don't pass the smaller test, the trials that Allah is giving us, then we won't be able to reach our Karbala. We won't be able to reach the Imam. We won't be able to reach Jannah. It will be there, but because of our own fault, because of our own shortcomings, we haven't reached there. And hence, we need to know what these fitna is, what this fitna is, what these trials are, so that we can untie those chains, pass these tests so that we can reach that higher stage. We can reach that stage and we won't have those chains that are holding us back. Many people wanted to be with Imam Hussein. What stopped them? What stopped these people? You see, many things that came about and they stopped these people. When Muslim ibn Aqil came to Kufa, many people came out to help him, to be with him. And imagine, an uprising. The representative of the Imam is here and he's rising up. And everyone's there with him. The excitement. You can feel it in the air. There's electricity in the air. So many people are there and you are happy. Look at the amount of people we have. Ibn Ziyad has nothing. You know, he is cordoned off in his palace with a handful of people. We can ransack that palace and it'll be it for him. So many people. But what prevented them from reaching their goal? I mean, one night, Muslim ibn Aqil lost his whole army. I mean, that was the fastest and largest desertion in the history of mankind. You talk about deserting your leader in a flash. From morning till night, he lost all the people. So what prevented them from being with him, sticking by him? You see, it was these chains, these trials that they faced. See, Allah, when he explains this, and I'll explain more tomorrow, but just lead me this ayat. When he says that you're going to be tested, then he said, listen, I'm going to give you the format of the test also. As a mu'min, you know you're being examined. And I'm going to give you the format of that test. You know, he released the test paper. So that we know what kind of test we are getting. And let me give that to you. You send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
He released the test paper to make it easy for you. Say that, listen, this is the way I'm going to take your test. This is it. You know, I mean, for example, when we write any tests, you know, SATs or any test that we are writing, if we don't know what the format of the test is, we won't even know how to pass it, what to do with it. But if you know it, it makes it easier for us. Is it multiple choice? You know, I mean, what kind of test is it? So Allah is explaining the test and he says, listen, I will give you the test paper so you know what the format of the test is. And he gives it in the Quran, so there's no doubt in it. You know, if he gave it in the hadith, you know, probably there was a doubt that this hadith is not authentic. Nowadays you have a lot of half-baked ulama, you know, who speak of that. This hadith is not authentic, that is not authentic, and this and that. In fact, you know, one such Pseudo Alim, made a whole website of all the authentic hadiths. Yeah. Now, we tried to explain to him, listen, we don't have a Sahih Bukhari in our religion. You know, we don't have a Sahih Bukhari in our religion. Authentic and this authentic, that's the opinion of ulama. It's their own research. They do that research. You just can't say this is unauthentic or make a list of it. So what happened is that Allah, He speaks of it in the ayat, so there's no doubt about it. He says, وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيِّمْ مِنَ الْخَوْفِ وَالْجُوَيْ وَنَكْسِمْ مِنَ الْأَنْوَالِ وَالْأَنْفُسِ وَالْثَمَرَاتِ. He says, listen, this is your test. You are going to be tried by way of fear. You will be put through situations where you will be afraid and fear will be in your heart. And you will have to face fear. You will have to face fear in your life. You know, the fear of losing your job. The fear of losing your income. And then he says, if that's not enough, then I'm going to give you hunger. And when it comes to hunger, you know, you will lose your job. Allah will take away your job and then try you. Some people lose their iman right at the beginning. The fear of losing their job, they lose their iman. They'll start doing haram. And some people, after they lose their job, they lose their iman. Until they had their job and the fear of losing the job, it didn't hurt them. But when they lost the job, you see that they will lose their iman. And after losing your job, when you lose your bank account, وَنَقْسِمْ مِنَ الْأَمْوَالِ. Now he's going to take your bank account away also. Now the savings that you had and the stock options and everything that you had are all now finished. So now Allah will say, this is the third degree of test. Right? Now what are you going to do? And if that's not enough, now your life will be at risk. You see, if you pass that, then your life is at risk. He's going to put your life at risk. Your health. You know, after you lose your job, your income and your bank account, now you get a heart attack. High blood pressure, diabetes. And he wants to see, now are you going to lose your faith? Right? And if that's not enough, then it comes down to your children. You see, my friends, Allah gave this test paper. Now He says, now you know how it's going to come. So the people who were with Muslim ibn Aqil, they looked at the whole environment. What happened? The same test that Allah promised to believers, they faced the same trials in one day. They had the fear. When Ibn Ziyad, he sent out his people and said, listen, the army is coming. It's not even here yet. No one knows if it's coming. And in fact, it was a lie. He said, the army is coming. The fear of the army, you see, a lot of them left. It was fear of the army that a lot of them left. Then you see the woman came, their wives came to the husband. And they said, listen, come home. He said, I can't. This is Islam. This is Allah. This is the Imam. I can't leave him alone. He said, listen, there are many of them here. They don't need you. Well, you know, honey, you're right about that. And then they go home. Right? They went. The kids came. Looking up at them, he says, Father, we'll be orphans if you die. And he looked at those innocent eyes. My poor children, they need me more right now, and you left. My friend, understand these are trials you're facing, right? Allah speaks of all these things, inshallah, will come to them. How these things are trials. For everyone, they're trials. And in order to be with the Imam, you have to pass these trials. And if you don't pass these trials, you cannot be with the Imam. You cannot be with the Imam if you don't have these trials. And this is the reason why we see, my friend, that we need to know about fitna. How fitna happens, what are the reasons of fitna, so we can face it and pass it. And in these days that I'm here, inshallah, we'll go through those reasons and how it's going to happen and how we can pass those tests, so that we have a better chance of succeeding. A better chance of succeeding. You see, when the fitna came, those who passed these tests, then you see they came with the Imam. You know, they came with the Imam. And you see that. Zuhair ibn Qayn was avoiding Imam Hussein. You know, he was avoiding Imam Hussein. But you know, his test was his wife. His wife was his test. He wanted to see what his wife is going to do, how he's going to take care of his wife. He was not afraid of death. He was not afraid of losing his wealth. He showed that when he went there, he gave his life. He left his wealth. But the only thing that was stopping him was his wife. Meaning the love for his wife. His care for his wife. And when Imam Hussein called him, he went there, he came back to his wife, and he told his wife, this is the situation. His wife said, what are you going to do about it? He said, what am I going to do about it? I'm thinking. And you know what? She said, that if you're thinking, that he's asking you for help and you're thinking. And she became upset. Then he knew that she's ready. He said, the only reason I'm not going is to let you know that after me, you are going to face trials. Are you ready for it? And when he saw that she's ready for it, then he went out and said, now I'm going to face the trial with Hussein. I'm going to be with my Imam. See, when you pass those trials, then you come to the Imam. Then you reach your goal. Zuhair ibn Qayn did that. And now he showed it. On the day of Ashura, you see what happened. When the arrows were approaching and being shot at the Imam, it was Zuhair ibn Qayn who stood in front to take those arrows on his chest. My friends, it's not easy to be in that situation, knowing that the arrows are coming your way and that you're going to take those arrows on the chest. It's not easy to be in that situation. Many of us, when we look at that situation, will say that, you know, maybe, you know, like if we stood there also, I mean, why wouldn't we do that? You know, you remember Ayatollah Mutahhari, when he was researching his history and he came across this place, this point in history where two of the companions of Imam Hussein stood in front of the Imam and they were shot, and the arrows that were approaching them in order to protect the Imam, they were taking it on their own bodies. They would bring themselves between the arrows and the bodies. He was looking at that and said, you know what? What's so great about this? His thought in his own mind as he's reaching, what's so great about this? Any mu'min, anyone who loves Ahlul Bayt would do that for the Imam. I mean, look at all these people that we gave and our lives that have been given in the war, and they gave their lives for Islam. And why wouldn't anyone do that? You know? And with this research, with this mindset, and with this thought, you know, when he went to sleep, he says that in my sleep, I saw myself in the same position that Zuhair ibn Qayn was. I looked around, and it was the battlefield of Karbala, and I looked back, and Imam Hussein was making his prayer. And I looked in the front, the army was there, and they were shooting arrows. And I found myself in between the arrows and Imam Hussein. And I looked back at Imam and I said, now I have to protect the Imam. So now I waited for the arrows to come. And the arrows were far away. They looked very easy. And I said, I will protect the Imam. I have to defend the Imam. And as the arrows came closer, then each arrow that came close and it was headed towards the Imam, I had to go in that direction and I had to protect the Imam and take the arrow on my own self. But when the arrow became closer and it came closer to me, I saw that my death was written on that arrow. My mouth was written on that arrow, and that arrow, as it came towards me, my heart started to shake, my feet started to shake, and I moved away from the arrow. And then another arrow would come, and I moved away from that. Another arrow would come, and I moved away from that. And as I moved away from these arrows, after a while, I looked around, and I saw that every arrow that missed me went into Imam Hussein, and was inside his body. And I looked around and Imam Hussein was on the ground. And in that situation I woke up from the dream and I realized that salam be upon Zuhair ibn Qain. Peace be upon Zuhair ibn Qain, who took those arrows on himself so that Hussein would live. My friends, you see, these are, when you look at those who were the Shia of the Imam and true believers, then these were the believers who faced their trials and they came to Hussein. Hussein, you know, when these people came to Hussein, they weren't the ones who became happy. It was Hussein who became happy at seeing them. In all of Karbala, you know, in all, when, since the army of Hussein reached Karbala, there was a environment of gloom and sadness. Since Imam Hussein reached Karbala, the 2nd of Muharram he reached Karbala, you see, after that, everyone was looking at one another, and anyone who would come to Karbala would be in Yazid's side. You know, everyone used to come on Yazid's side. The armies used to come on Yazid's side. They'll say 1,000 soldiers coming, they'll come to Yazid's side. Everyone who came to Karbala came to Yazid's side. And everyone knew that what was building up. The whole environment was gloomy. Everyone would look at each other. They would know that this is destined. They would know that there is going to be something serious happening. And they would know that they have to protect themselves and the haram of Rasulullah. When these people, when they were in that situation, and there was gloom in the whole camp of Imam Hussein, Zainab salamullah alayha, she called Imam Hussein and said, Brother, everyone who comes, since we are here, everyone who is coming here, he is coming to help Yazid. He is coming to aid Yazid. Is there anyone in this ummah of my grandfather who is going to come and help you? Was there anyone who's going to come for your help? When Hussein, he heard this from Zainab, he says, why not Zainab? Someone is coming for me. Someone is coming to help me. And you know what? He wrote the letter to Habib ibn Mazar. And you know the letter that he wrote to Habib ibn Mazar. And he wrote to him and said, Habib, I wouldn't be writing this to you if I was alone. But Habib, I have the granddaughters of Rasulullah with me. I have Zainab and Kulthum with me. When Habib read that letter, he dropped to his knees. Stand up, because he was so ashamed. Again, but Habib, in order for you to reach the Imam, you will have to pass your test. And your test is your wife. You love your wife, but you have to get her ready. So he went to his wife, and his wife looked at him and said, Habib, what's wrong? Who sent the letter? He said, Hussein did. Hussein did. And what's he asking? What did he write you for? He said he's asking for help. He's saying that the granddaughters of Rasulullah are with him. And he's asking for help. And he started eating his food. His wife said, Habib, what are you going to do about it? Habib said, I'm thinking. Habib said, I'm thinking. And she said, when she heard back from Habib, she said, Habib, you take my ornaments. Let me get your sword. I will go and defend Hussein. When he knew that his wife is ready for the test that she has to face, he said, my wife, I just wanted to see if we are on the same page. When you are with this ideology, now I'm ready to go. Now Habib came. Habib came to Imam Hussein. As I said, my brother, from the 2nd of Muharram, all the people who came were coming towards the army of Yazid. Imam Hussein's camp, there was no one smiling. Everyone would look at each other and they would have their heads down, knowing what is the eventuality or what's the outcome of what is going to be. Everyone knew what is going to come. And when they see that a rider is coming towards them, they all look at that rider coming towards them and they go forward to see who this rider is. When Habib comes towards the camp of Hussein for the first time in Karbala, there is celebration in the camp of Imam Hussein. There is celebration in the camp of Imam Hussein and everyone is celebrating. Habib ibn Mazahir is here. Listen, my friends, this is the true believer of the Imam who faced his trials and he came to the Imam. When he came to the Imam, Imam is happy to see him. He brings a smile to the face of the Imam. He brings a smile to the face of Hazrat Zainab. He lightens her heart. Everyone is happy to see Habib ibn Mazahir. But I ask you, who is Habib ibn Mazahir? Is he a strong warrior? Is he a strong soldier? He's an 80-year-old man. How is he going to help anything in the battlefield? But you see, Habib ibn Mazahir is that Shia that when he came to the camp of Imam Hussein, he brought happiness, he brought jubilation. Everyone is celebrating. Zainab is confused. She sends her Fizza. Go and see what has happened. Why are these people laughing? Why are these people celebrating? When she goes and comes back and says, Habib ibn Mazahir has come to help Hussein, and that brings a smile to Zainab, brings a jubilation to her heart, and she tells Habib, and she tells Fizza, go give my salam to Habib. Go give my salam to Habib. When she comes out and says, Sani al-Zahra, the daughter of Zahra, Zainab al-Kubra is sending salam to you. Habib couldn't take it anymore. He fell to the ground, put the dead of Karbala in his hand. He says, what a time has come. Dad, hello, babe. I'm looking at her servant. And Habib happy and sending salam to us.